Hi everyone, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for being here. So many things on my mind. Things have been happening. Busy world. Lots going on. I'm going to try something that... I'm going to do this a little differently. I'm going to suggest to you, before you dive into this podcast, I really urge you to study the playlist on the Lotus Lectures. You can, if you like, also follow up those lectures, that series, with the Gosho, if you're interested in Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra. It's very, very deep and helpful. But I really, really urge you to study the current practice of Buddhism for this age that Shakyamuni taught for people of this time. Before you start digging into earlier sutras, not because there's any great secret there, what I'm concerned about always is your practice and anything that might confuse or befuddle you, it acts as an obstacle to your correct practice in this age and time. And that is the Lotus Sutra, and Nichiren is our most current bodhisattva in the regards of scholarship of that practice of the Lotus Sutra. So please make that your focus. At the same time, you know me, I'm very strict about Shakyamuni's advice that we study all of Buddhist scholarship and non-Buddhist scholarship. So in staying true to that, I'm going to read and evaluate just a short chapter here out of the larger Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, translation by Kanzi. And it has its cultural bias of Christianity in it. But even so, and the wording can be cumbersome here. And this is why I say, if you study Lotus Sutra and Nichiren, or at least Lotus Sutra prior to these kinds of studies, you will have the facility to unlock this language and understand exactly what it's saying. But if you approach your practice of Buddhism from these earlier sutras, you can start to get hooked and lost in vernacular and words, and what is that? And is that all about the brain, or is that, what is that about? And Buddhism is about the mind. So yes, you can drift into these rabbit holes of how the mind works, how thinking works. And certainly the appetizing title of Perfection of Wisdom. Boy, I wanted to be smart, right? It's very alluring. But the depth of the conversation here relies on volumes and volumes. For instance, today I'm going to talk about non-existence. That's chapter 61 in here. There's this much book and information ahead of this. And this very much is constructed on top of all of this. So I'm skipping a ton of foundational argumentation in this book. In this book, not Buddhism in general, just in this book. But because we study Lotus Sutra, because we study Nichiren's doctrine, I can do that and dive into this, and I can take it apart, and you'll be with me. Yeah, I get that. And this becomes usable then, because it's yet another path to that same understanding, right? But if you come to this first and you go, oh, I've heard Nagarjuna, non-existence, that's all I care about, this is going to leave you going, what? And that's not useful. I mean, a certain amount of that is useful because that keeps us engaged. But if you have nothing else to base it on, it can really dissuade you. And I don't want to do that. All right. That was the longest disclaimer ever. But that's... this is important. This is the most important thing in your life, is your Buddhist mind. So I don't want to be guilty of an obstacle. Okay? Non-extinction. What is non-extinction? Just the title alone we could make several videos about. And because this is the perfection of wisdom, this is a mind state. This is a state of mind speaking to a fully developed bodhisattva of what it is to experience this life through the mind of an unattached, Buddha-wise bodhisattva, and how the world appears in its reality as opposed to its samsaric cycle reality. So we're going to be bouncing back and forth on this precipice of I'm attached to everything and everything appears to me from that point of view, to that point of view is some provisional little dogma that's happening that isn't real, that's got everybody attached to suffering and pain, and because it's not real. And with that kind of detachment, the wisdom, the perfection of wisdom, is that perceptive shift that sees all of this drama of samsara as a source for compassion. Wow, how do I cultivate the minds of Buddha in people trapped in that samsaric perfection, or non-perfection of wisdom, I guess, the perception of holding on to things, permanence of things? How do I unglue them to come to this precipice with me and see well over this condition without being dragged into it? This is the perfection of wisdom, is attaining the Buddha mind as samsaric bodhisattva. This is the perfection of bodhisattva wisdom, which opens the door to the Buddha wisdom, which is unattached, while still in samsara. Do you see? It's a perspective change, perceptive change, a paradigm shift. That's what the perfection of wisdom is all about. And in this short 2-3 page chapter, we hit on one of the major themes. This, not that, is not that. That kind of argumentation. That's why I picked non-extinction. So what is non-extinction? Extinction being the perceptive falling apart of anything that ever was constituted before. Non-extinction deals directly with the illusion of the mind that something is extant, because it certainly cannot be extinct if it never was extant. Extant, extinct. Non-extinction, what is that? Is that everything exists? Or is that nothing ever existed in the first place, therefore there is nothing to be extinct? That's where we are in perfection of wisdom. The cognition of extinction and of non-production. So you understand now what non-production is that if there's no extinction, then there never was something that existed. And if you perceive something as ever having actually existed permanently, that there's a molecule of Deborah, or a molecule of cat, or an atom, or a subatom, or a fermion of cat, that suddenly became an electron of cat. That's the attachment to the idea that something exists. Whereas at that same level of fermions and electrons, things are both, because there is a samsaric reality. That's the reality of attachment. That's the world we live in every day. That's our samsaric reality. And yet, the real reality is that all of that is ephemeral. It's a mental construct we're attached to, and that if we let it go, we can then see the same play without being dragged into it and observe it as a state of mind. And if we change our state of mind to observation, detached, this is where our compassion comes from. This is our perfection of wisdom. We see the fermions rather than the electrons. Study some science if you want to know what the heck I'm babbling about there. That's also a rabbit hole, by the way, I caution you. Thereupon, the Venerable Subhuti thought to himself, isn't that interesting? I keep harping about Buddhism is about the mind. Buddhism is about the mind. Buddhism is about perception, a change, a shift in perception. And the first sentence of non-extinction is, thereupon the Venerable Subhuti thought to himself, deep, to be sure, is this enlightenment of the Tathagatas, the Buddha state. That's what the enlightenment of the Tathagatas, plural, means. That this state that all is accessible to all of us, that is fundamental to all of us, is profound, right? This looking over unattached is profound. Let me question the Tathagata about it, since there's a representative called Shakyamuni here. Let me ask him about it, since he dwells in that state all the time. The Venerable Subhuti then said to the Lord, Shakyamuni, inexhaustible, O Lord, is the perfection of wisdom. The Lord, because like space, it cannot be extinguished. Words. I've got to turn this fan on. Excuse me one moment. Well, that only took way too long. All right. Sorry, just starting to feel sweat on its way out. Because like space, it cannot be extinguished. What do you think of when you think of space? Stars, galaxies, universe. Right? But think of when this was written. B- before the turn of the millennia. This is around a time before the time of Nagarjuna and expressed by Nagarjuna as part of his teachings of the Madhyamika Karika, right? Like space. Space then was, what the heck is between all those stars in the heavens? What's this? Right? Of course, we know it's air, we breathe it, but I want you to consider that when this was written, like space, it cannot be extinguished, is this idea of space, space, literally the word space, isn't something, it's nothing. And so you can't extinguish nothing. Right? This is very straightforward thinking here. If you think of the perfection of wisdom, like space, it cannot be extinguished. That's actually much more profound than we might have thought at first glance. Because now he's Shakyamuni saying that even what you think is this alternate state, this Buddha mind, this perfection of wisdom state of your bodhisattva development is also without existence. You can't terminate it. It's like space itself. Another mind blower. You could spend some serious hours chanting about that. Because just when you think you've got your hooks into Buddha mind, right? I get it. The Buddha mind is unattached. So I look at everything that's going on, dispassionately from a samsaric perspective, but as a bodhisattva, incredibly compassionate, right? These are all emotive terms. Emotive of what? Of your mind, of your samsaric mind. So all of this happens in a bodhisattva who is himself or herself in samsara. Even though you can attain this clarity of the Buddha mind in this human form, amazing as that is, now you have to contemplate it even more profoundly, because now you're told that that Buddha mind that you've been working so hard to attain also is non-extant. What just happened? Because there's no extinguishing it. Oh, right. We have to remind ourselves. This clarity of understanding has always existed. It is integral to the very forces that life is born of, precipitated from. Life is a condition from potential. Potential energies that once form, or the idea of forming, the spark that begins the nidana, the formation of what? Of thought? Of fermions, electrons? The Big Bang. You want to think about that scientifically, look into Roger Penrose's conformal cyclical cosmology. It's an amazing theory, but makes so much sense. That's another rabbit hole. You're welcome. The idea that you can have a detached mind is itself an idea. And that idea is also born of a previous condition, previous to life itself, previous to the formations. You see, because even as you contemplate what is the Buddha mind, you are still in the realm of creation, of formation, of perception of phenomena. But before all this, there is noumena, just potential, unformed, no karma. The minute, the second, the Planck constant, that, another rabbit hole, that formation is conceived, karma begins. Energy and work. Energy and work. Potential energy becomes applied energy, becomes kinetic energy. It has momentum. And that momentum, if it's not sufficient, dies off, goes extinct, and we're back at potential. If it has enough momentum, if the work is enough to move this kinetically to the next development formation, then it becomes karma on top of karma on top of karma. And when you and I become human, we can consciously affect that momentum, that karma. We influence our own karma and the karma of everything around us. This is profoundly basic Buddhism, but it is profoundly difficult to grasp. And I have only gone a sentence or two into this chapter. Because, like space, it cannot be extinguished. Subhuti. How should one aspire for the perfection of wisdom? How can you aspire for something that is non-existent? Shakyamuni. Through the non-extinction of form, etc., of the knowledge of all modes, and furthermore, through the space-like non-extinction of form, etc., of the knowledge of all modes. Moreover, through the space-like non-extinction of the karma formations, etc., through the space-like non-extinction of old age and death, of sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and despair, it is thus that the Bodhisattva, the great being, Samsara, should aspire for the perfection of wisdom, to know the thing that is not. This is the surveying of the conditioned co-production which avoids the extremes. Now, that was a very compassionate statement. What does that mean? This is the surveying, as a samsaric practitioner of Buddhism, in the Bodhisattva mission, which includes affecting one's environment, others included. You are now going to chant, meditate, and look upon the world in which you inhabit. A condition of knowing, a condition of wisdom, which is a samsaric thing, that sees, that understands, that struggles to understand, the conditioned co-production which avoids the extremes. Co-production, why? Nidana, because codependent generation. The genesis of everything depends on something else. The original formations from potential that I was talking about earlier. Work. What is work? Work is the, my favorite made up word, combinatory. It puts things together. Nothing comes into being. Nothing forms into being without the combination of phenomena. Fermions, electrons, electrons, protons, protons, neutrons, atoms, molecules, molecules, so on and so forth. Chromosomes, DNA, all of it. Everything breaks down to potential. Not nothing, but literally no thing. Nothing is combined. Nothing is working. Everything is just in a stasis. If you can see everything that way, then you yourself can entertain the mind of that way. You can peer into the Buddha mind. And only here in Samsara can you do so, because once you're extinct, that mind is gone. And that situation of non-existence exists. Or simply like space cannot be extinguished, because it is the state. I'm telling you, it does you a lot of good service to study Lotus Sutra and Nichiren first before you dive into this, because this can tie knots in your brain. But if you know Lotus Sutra and you understand your practice just a bit, this is poetry. This is amazing discourse on something so, so profound. No wonder only certain people could attain enlightenment in those days. This required a lot of brain work to understand. This is the surveying of conditioned production which avoids the extremes. What are the extremes? Annihilation or eternalism. Those are the extremes. You shouldn't go there, because that's a proposition of deep attachment. You can't annihilate something unless you first are so incredibly attached to its existence that you must destroy it to end it. If you understand that there was no thing there to begin with, that it's just a construct of formations of the mind, then there's nothing to destroy. So annihilationism is completely outside the realm of Buddhism. So nihilists, branches of early teachings and latter teachings that have as their goal of enlightenment to destroy this body, right? Light themselves on fire, or believe that it is the end of this earthly vessel that then provides the launching pad for you to go to that Buddha land somewhere. That's just magical, mystical thinking. It doesn't belong in Buddhism at all. That's an extreme. And then eternalism. Oh, I have a soul that will go on. There's a bag of Sylvain that will exist throughout time. It's just a matter of where it is. Total crap. Again, if you understand the perfection of wisdom, that non-extinction, then you can't possibly go to those extremes. They're just not there. To survey conditioned co-production in such a manner, without the extremes, which is also why this is sometimes called the middle way, that is the special dharma of a bodhisattva who is seated on the terrace of enlightenment. When he thus surveys conditioned co-production, he surveys it, he sees it without being in it in his mind or her mind, she will gain the cognition of the all-knowing, the Buddha mind. A bodhisattva who, coursing in the perfect wisdom through this aspiration for space-like non-extinction, surveys conditioned co-production, cannot stand on the level of disciples or pratyeka Buddhas. In other words, the two worlds of learning and realization, or in Hinayana, the maximal arhat is a Pratyeka Buddha. But he's not. She's not. She's still stuck in these extremes. But will stand in full enlightenment, which is the practice of the Lotus Sutra. If persons belonging to the Bodhisattva vehicle turn away from full enlightenment, and Nichiren talks a lot about that, they do so because they have not resorted to the attentions on this perfection of wisdom. They fail to cognize how a Bodhisattva who courses in perfection or in perfect wisdom should survey conditioned co-production through the aspiration for space-like non-extinction. That's a lot of words. You might have to reread that several times. But hopefully with what I've prepared you with so far, this will start to make some sense to you, right? Persons who belong to the Bodhisattva vehicle and who yet turn away from full enlightenment do so because they have failed to resort to this skill in means. Man, we hear these words over and over again in sutras, don't we? Skill in means. What the hell is that? Have a better understanding of what's happening, unattached. Right? Surveying conditioned co-production. That's watching samsara, looking at it. If you fail to see this, then you'll just be in samsara. You won't be a fully developed bodhisattva. You may end up being a Pratyeka Buddha, and you won't escape suffering. Those bodhisattvas, great beings, however, who do not turn away from full enlightenment, do so because they all have resorted to this perfection of wisdom. They've all grasped the true nature of all things, of all phenomena, that it is something that is born of a process, not permanent, not extant, in and of itself. He's not saying that this bottle of water doesn't exist. He's saying that everything about this bottle of water, cap, plastic, label, everything about it is just a provisional thing. It's a temporary instantiation of a long process of formations. And it is right now, as I hold it, decaying and going away. One day, even this plastic will no longer exist. It may take centuries, but it will break down. Nothing is permanent. And what the Bodhisattva sees is that it's not only true of things that may last hundreds of years, but it's true of every moment. Because this moment now no longer exists. Because this is a new moment. And so is this one. And so is this one. And that's the nature of all things. That is the nature of non-extinction. Because it never was. It was just an experience. A momentary cognition. In this envelope of samsara. This container. Where are we time-wise? I don't want to make this too long. I think this will have to be a second video. Let me see how far I can get here. Those bodhisattvas, great beings, however, who do not turn away from full enlightenment, Buddhahood, do so because they have all resorted to this perfection of wisdom. Resorted. They've chosen the perception of Buddha wisdom to understand the world, samsara. This is where their compassion comes in. The Bodhisattva, great beings who course in skill and means and perfection of wisdom, should, through the aspiration for space-like non-extinction, survey the perfection of wisdom and aspire to it. So this is a constant effort. It's not like you get there and go, okay, I'm enlightened, woohoo. It's a constant effort. Why? Because moment to moment to moment, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. When he or she surveys conditioned co-production, a bodhisattva certainly does not see any dharma that is being produced without a cause, nor does he review a dharma that is permanent and never stopped. The dharma, this Buddha wisdom of perfection of wisdom, isn't something you just created because you got the aha moment. It's been there all along. It's part of the life process. It's part of samsara as much as it's not. He reviews no dharma as a doer, one who feels, one who knows, one who sees, nor does he review as appeased or not appeased. It is certainly thus that a bodhisattva, a great being who courses in perfect wisdom, should survey conditioned co-production. At the time when the bodhisattva courses in perfect wisdom, he does not review form, etc., the knowledge of all modes, as permanent or impermanent, as ease or ill, as self or not self, as appeased or not appeased. He does not review the perfection of wisdom, etc. He does not review enlightenment, nor that dharma by which he would review enlightenment. Oh, yeah. Nor does he review that dharma by which he would effect the forsaking of all residues of the defilements. It is thus that a bodhisattva should course in the perfection of wisdom without taking any dharma as a basis. At the time when the bodhisattva, without taking any dharma as a basis, courses in the perfection of wisdom, at that time Mara, the evil one, is afflicted with the dart of sorrow, just as a man whose parents have died is afflicted with the dart of sorrow, the dart of the deepest sorrow. Just so Mara, the evil one, in respect to the bodhisattva, the great being, who courses in perfect wisdom and takes no dharma as a basis. So Mara, we're going to talk about Mara a bit. Mara is simply a stand-in for earthly attachments because they are suffering. That is Mara. Subhuti says, is this affliction confined to just one Mara? Or does it extend to all the Maras in the great Trishilokasam, to each one on his own seat? And Shakyamuni says, all evil Maras in the great Trishilokasam are affected with the dart of the deepest sorrow, and they do not enjoy themselves where they are. If a bodhisattva, a great being, becomes not lacking in the dwelling of the perfection of wisdom, then the entire world, with its gods, mens, and asuras, cannot gain entry to him, nor can it find any ground for taking hold of him and turning him away from the full enlightenment. Therefore, then, Subhuti, the bodhisattva who wants quickly to know full enlightenment should dwell in the dwelling of perfect wisdom. Okay, we're going to stop there. That is a major point. Subhuti asks kind of a stupid question, but I guess it makes sense then. When Shakyamuni says, if you can attain the Buddha mind, then in the Buddha mind, you don't see that that's a teaching. You don't see that that's something you have achieved or not achieved. You don't see it as a negation of samsara. You don't see it as an accomplishment of samsara. You simply see the real state of all things. And so as that observer, you can look upon samsara with the compassion of someone who cares to lift everything out of that condition to this Buddha condition. And Mara says, well, does that only affect some of the desires, some of the sufferings? No, of course not, Subhuti. once you gain access to this Buddha mind, all of samsara, all of the causes permanence and birth, death, the cycle of birth, death itself, becomes something you look at with great compassion to alleviate, to assist those stuck in that place to attain Buddha mind. And how do you do that? You have to constantly aspire to stay in that Buddha mind. And how do you do that? You chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo to this mandala of Gohanzon, and you then invoke that Buddha mind to shut all the maras down, to see clearly what the nature of life is. This, I'm telling you, this kind of study requires that you have some knowledge of the Lotus Sutra and perhaps lots of Gosho, because then it truly makes sense what Shakyamuni was talking about all along. The language of this doesn't help in its clarity, but once you know what it's pointing to, then the clarity starts to bubble up. And we're going to stop there for today. I think that was a lot of wordplay, and I hope that you got something out of it. If you're reading Nagarjuna, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, I support you. I also have great compassion for you, because until that aha moment where you tie this in with Lotus Sutra concepts and some Nichiren elucidation, Tendai, Dengyo, these other scholars, then this will start to make perfect sense. Sorry. And you will gain access to perfect wisdom. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your health. Be kind to yourself and others. Keep on studying. And don't forget, Daimoku, the key to everything, right? Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now. Hey, thank you for being here. Did you know there's a third way you can help support this channel? And it won't cost you a cent. Yep, if you are not able to be a patron on Patreon or use the PayPal me at .com at Sifu Sylvain because you don't have the financial fortune to help support this channel right now, you, as I say, always support this channel by watching. But you can also help us grow so that maybe one day we can get over 10,000 subscribers and YouTube will grace us with monetization. It's not a lot, but if you can make sure you're subscribed and share a video like a simple one, just go into the search criteria and type monk and you'll have a video that'll come up that's been up for years about what is a monk. You know, it's called monk, who, how, where, something like that. That might be a great introduction to somebody who doesn't understand what a monk is to begin with. It's a tool. Use this channel as a tool to help you with your bodhisattva practice and share a video to somebody who you think, oh, I know somebody who'll benefit from watching this. And in that way, you can help us grow. And that's a really good way to help your practice along as well. So just wanted to drop that in on you, in case that's something that you might find useful. Take care of yourself again, and I'll see you soon. Bye.